Countdown and everything. You're right, Amy. It's America's most haunted on Blog Talk Radio. And boy, oh boy, are we excited to be here tonight, aren't we, Teresa?
We certainly are. This is going to be another good one.
It's going to rock. And I am so, so excited that, well, first of all, before we talk about our guests who are here with us, spiritually or electronically speaking, but we hit a big milestone. We sent in the, we hope, final version of the America's Most Haunted book proposal last night. Bum, ba, ba, ba. Da-da-da-da. I'm waiting for more fanfare and whatnot. But anyway, yeah, it's really exciting. We've worked real hard on it. We wrote one complete, really, you know, very piecemeal, very granular chapter on the Ohio State Reformatory down in Mansfield. And then we have 9 descriptions, fairly detailed, 1 to 2 pages each. And then, of course, we had to go in all kinds of crap about us and why we rule and how we're going to promote the hell out of this book and why they should give us all kinds of money up front and so on and so forth. So we'll see if any of that happens. In the meantime, we are absolutely delighted to have Amy Allen and Steve DeShavi from The Dead Files, which I got to tell you, it's a show apart. It is a different kind of paranormal investigation show, and I think it's all the better as a result. Welcome, Amy and Steve.
Hi, thank you.
It is our pleasure. Now, as Teresa will tell you, I talk a lot. Sometimes I talk over her, and I don't want to do that. And I had the real pleasure of talking to both of you guys just about a year ago now. It was right before you were going on the air, and that is still absolutely one of my favorite interviews. And I was just reading over it again. And it's you guys were really very forthcoming and a lot more personal and real than an awful lot of interviewees are, and I just wanted to thank you once again for that. It was tremendous. So, Teresa, would you like to begin talking to our esteemed guest?
Absolutely. This might be my only question, guys. So.
Oh, for sure.
Is it going to be like a 10-part question?
No, I'm a simple gal. I'll keep it simple. I want to kind of approach this from a novice point of view. I am a huge fan of the show. I watch it all the time, and I applaud you for doing something different. I think it's absolutely fabulous, and I love it. But some of our listeners may not be that familiar as Eric is with speaking with you in the past. But what I'd like to know is how the show came about. Whose brilliant idea was it to pair up Amy, who I knew of you before I knew of actually, because I'd seen you on other programs and such. But who decided to put the retired police officer in with the psychic? Because I think it's a brilliant combination, and I think it was long overdue.
Do you want to answer that, or you want me to answer?
You answer.
I got to answer, of course. Well, I had been on a documentary for the NYPD called NYPD 24/7, and I got noticed by a producer in Hollywood, and I got reached out to and asked if I wanted to do TV. Fast forward, I thought it was a joke, and I hung up, and they called back, they were persistent. And then a few years later, they reached back out to me and asked me if I would be interested in doing a paranormal show, and I said, absolutely not. He said, believe me, you got to come out, you got to meet Amy. So the creator of the show, Jim Casey, hooked us up together. We did an investigation out in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And after I got finished meeting Amy and seeing what she was capable of, I did a turnaround and I said, yeah, I'm in. And that's basically it. It's that simple.
So you were a skeptic before you met Amy? You weren't a big believer in the paranormal?
I consider myself open-minded, but I've never experienced anything. And so for me, it's just... And I used a couple of psychics on some homicide cases I've had, and I wasn't really impressed. So my, my dealings with that type of, people just didn't really make me happy about it. So I just, but when I met Amy, things changed. So, and I tell people that all the time.
Yeah, you did even, you know, right as the show was launching, and I think that first season really unfolded amazingly. Something that people keep asking me, you know, comments on that article we did a year ago, and just people I've been running into since we announced this show, is, you know, they wonder. It just seems so astonishing at the factuality of what Amy arrives at. Does that still astonish you, Steve? And is that something that you can count on? I mean, does it ever not happen?
No,
for you?
It's something we always worry about. Well, we not worry about it. It is what it is. Listen, we don't pull any punches here. She does her thing. I do my thing. If it matches, great. If it don't, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm. No sensitive is 100% accurate.
Yeah.
You know? I don't get every nook and cranny all the time.
Or even the crooks and nannies.
Right.
Absolutely. You know what it is? It's a very organic show. It flows by, you know, and I'm always changing things up during the investigation, which drives the producers crazy. But I really don't care. I'm doing my case. I'm doing it my way.
Yep.
And, you know, and if we match at the end, and you know what? I sit down at the reveal with her every time, and I get blown away. I know I don't show it on my face a lot, but believe me, inside I'm like, I can't believe this girl did this again.
It really is amazing, and it's such an unusual, you know, skill. I am astonished even now, and it amazes me show by show. Sure, I mean, sometimes some episodes the details really, really, really line up, and when you see a comparison of the drawing, you know, with a photograph or something, and it's just really startlingly aligned. And other times it's perhaps less so. But, you know, I think what people are still absolutely dumbfounded by is this process that you go through, Amy. Do you find that it changes over time? Is it kind of a similar process each time? How do you go about the process? I guess we should also kind of back it up, and for those who perhaps haven't watched as much or aren't as familiar with the show or with your work, perhaps if you could just maybe walk us through your process and what you go through. And then I guess just beyond that, I'm interested, as you've done the show and now the episodes are starting to accumulate, has anything changed for you? Is it evolving?
Well, I've been doing this for a very long time, and the only thing that's changed over time is that I'm very, very comfortable as a physical medium. But what I've noticed is that over the years and doing this, I have also kind of developed my latent abilities, like psychometry. So I do utilize that more and more, especially if there's no dead people there. It's something that I have come to rely on.
And what is that?
Psychometry.
Yes.
Oh, being able to, like, touch a wall or touch the floor, touch an object and receive information from it.
Amazing.
I have a psychic friend. We just had her on, Michelle Belanger, and her and another friend of ours, Jackie Williams, kind of ran me through a little bit of psychometry, which I found absolutely fascinating, to be able to get the energy from an object the way they do. And they try to walk me through it and try to help me see if I can sense anything, which I found I'm not very good at, but I keep working on it. But being friends with them, I know that what they go through can be very physically and emotionally draining.
Yeah.
And it seems on the show that, Amy, it really affects you on a physical level as well as a psychological level.
Yeah.
I was wondering, is there anything that you do to kind of shield yourself but still be able to be open to the messages and the energies that are around you? And have you ever gotten very, very sick or to the point where you just had to step back on a case?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely very physically taxing. especially as a physical medium, when you're a physical medium, you are literally utilizing every cell in your body, and you are a living person that is interacting with dead energy, which is not particularly healthy. So when you do that often, you do a lot of physical mediums get ill often, because. Mm-hmm. But I do have guides that I work with, and I do, do my meditations and, try to eat right, try to exercise every other day, just trying to be better, especially working at a pace like this. I found out that that's important because I did get sick at the beginning of this season, actually.
Yeah.
And I had to have a surgery. So, but you just get, that's just something that's part of this.
I remember last time we talked, I was actually kind of almost felt overwhelmed when I realized that the impact that this has on your life, not just, hey, I'm on a show, now I'm going to go into this thing, but this is something that can impact you at any time and in any place, and even affect your sleep. Is that still the case? How has the last year gone for you as far as your relationship with the spiritual world and how that affects you?
Well, it's the dead are fine. I get crazy ones who show up every once in a while, and of course, the investigation. There's a lot of crazy ones out there that I'm meeting. But there's also a lot of great ones that I'm helping, and that's important, and helping the living to understand them and what's around them is important. It's a difficult lifestyle to deal with.
If you could have chosen whether or not to have this gift, would you have?
I don't know. I mean, really, I that would be something, if I had, if they had given me, I'm sure, I don't know.
It's a tough question to answer, I think, Bob.
Yeah.
Well, sure it is.
If you ask me that question, I'd tell you no.
I mean, I love being able to help people, both living and dead, and building that bridge between them. I love the science of parapsychology. It's difficult. It impacts every aspect of my life. And, I think I spent a lot of time trying to be normal, so that I could date freely, I could sleep, I could do, and that was never the case. It impacted every aspect of my life.
But you also feel that you're meant to do this.
Right.
That's what it boils down. She also knows she's meant to do this.
Right.
So it's a blessing and a curse.
Yeah. Amy, do you ever have spiritual energies or entities or dead people that follow you around, that you can't get rid of, that won't leave you alone? Maybe they followed you from an investigation or followed you from a case or just hangers-on. I know people that seem to have these energies that are with them for years and years and years, and they just won't go away. Do you have any, spiritual hitchhikers, I guess. I don't know what else to call them.
Groupies.
Sometimes they'll hang out. If they're nice, I don't really mind. But my point of helping them is to leave here and go where they need to be. So I kind of talk to them, and but if they're not nice, then I throw them out. I don't tolerate that behavior.
One of the things I've picked up is that your strong belief, I'm hopefully not putting words in your mouth, that the living really are the ones with the power.
Yes.
And so I would imagine when you came to that realization, or maybe you've had it all along, but that was probably quite comforting to know, at least kind of, at the bottom line, you're the one, or we're the ones who have the power, and we can, draw the line.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. I was hoping perhaps.
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
Expounding upon it. I mean, was that something? I know you were seeing shadow people when you were very young. I mean, were you aware then that you ultimately had the power, or did that come? Did that realization come later?
You know, I think I realized that in my late teens, early 20s.
So it took a while.
Yeah, I was a kid. I didn't know what the hell was going on.
What are you trying to say? She's old?
No, no, I meant from 4 to early 20s. You know, must have made it that much more difficult to really have that kind of level of...
Yeah, it was hard.
Uncertainty. Was it like an epiphany? Did something happen that made you realize that, or just was it a gradual thing?
It was a gradual thing.
Was your family supportive of this? Were they understanding, or did they just think you had imaginary friends, or kind of them like it?
Both of my parents are sensitive, but they didn't really talk about it until I went to them and said, you know, look, this is what I am, and I've got to deal with this. And initially they weren't, you know, too excited about that. But my father is a physical medium and my mother is a telepath and also, I believe, a mental medium, but she chooses not to deal with it. So they were having their own battles when I was a child with what they can do, and they weren't talking to anybody, so none of us were talking to each other, and we lived in this horrible house that was, you know, insanely active, and everybody was having their problems. My father's down in the basement, you know, digging it up, and he's looking up all the history on the location. My mother's, you know, in the bathroom crying because there was a woman who had killed herself there, and I'm dealing with this dead boy in the closet, you know, but nobody was really talking about it. My mother always just says, well, I just knew, and we just, that was that, you know, it just was a part of me, and that they would try to protect me, like when I would be running around the house or, you know, doing weird stuff in the middle of the night.
Wow.
Yeah, that's tough.
I thought I had a bad childhood.
You know, I got to tell you, I am married to a police officer.
Oh.
And I am also a paranormal investigator, and my husband is a, I don't even want to say skeptic, I just want to say non-believer. He thinks that I'm a little goofy and a little strange, and even if in his heart of hearts maybe he wants to believe in something, because of his profession, he has a very, very hard time accepting it.
Most cops have that front they have to put up, but, you know, if you're not open-minded, especially what I did, I mean, I worked homicide for a long time. If you don't have an open mind, you're not going to clear a case. So you can't be narrow-minded when it comes to anything, let alone, you know, I mean, I didn't go, when somebody came up to me and says, yeah, I see pink elephants floating around, I mean, it's a nut, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, to think that there's nothing else going on in our world is kind of a little arrogant and a little ignorant at the same time. So for me, it's just, I've always been open to, you know, it's like broccoli. I'll try it once, but I ain't going to eat it if I don't like it.
Do your contemporaries give you a hard time about this? Or, I mean, what are you doing hooking up with a psychic? You know, you're a facts guy.
I don't want to get into it, but I've gotten into a couple of fist fights with old friends. Not over me, but over Amy. And you know what it is? They know the type of guy I was, and for me to turn around and be doing this now, you know, if you knew me 5 years ago on the street, you would have said, this is not the same guy that's on the show now. So they're looking at me as a street guy and, you know, working the street, doing cases, to dealing with dead, not dead people, but dead bodies, you know. So, and they look at me like, oh, like I, you know, I swallowed the Kool-Aid, kind of.
Mm. Yeah.
That pisses me off.
Yeah.
That really, really pisses me off because I've always considered myself open-minded, and I tell them, just meet Amy for a couple of hours, then talk to me. You know what I mean?
Well, they're also questioning your judgment, which...
Oh, yeah, but I don't give a shit what they think.
They have no reason to do.
Well, I do, to a point of, it, not for me so much, but what they say about Amy. That's what annoys me. Like, you know, you really believe this crap? You know, that kind of thing. You know what? I could say, honestly, that I'd probably look at the show if it wasn't me on the show and honestly say, you know what? Maybe this is a lot of bull, but I'd give it a little bit of, you know, I'd give it a chance anyway. And if a guy, if I met the guy that was on the show and he said to me, well, you know, this is my background and I do believe it and I think she's a, she's legit 110%, then I'll take his word for it. You know, and that's just, you know, basically how I feel about it anyway.
If you ever looked back on a case that you had when you were working as working homicide, for example,
right.
And now that you know better, now that you've worked with Amy, have you ever thought, God, I wish I had her then. I wish I could have answers to an unsolved case, maybe one that's still, that you never got an answer for. Do you ever wish you could go back with Amy and maybe reopen it and see what would happen?
It's funny you said, I say exactly the same thing. I wish I knew Amy then. You know, there's a couple of kid cases I worked that still eat at me at night, but, you know, it is what it is. It's part of the job. You can't solve every case. But, you know, like I said, I had used a couple of psychics on a couple of cases I had, and they didn't lead me anywhere but down a river. So I kind of lost my faith in, you know, and I did anything I could to solve a case.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, if that meant reaching out to a psychic, I did. I did it twice, and the money came out of my pocket. And, you know, the NYPD frowns upon it like most law enforcement agencies anyway. It's not admissible in court, number one, but I wasn't looking for that. I was just looking for a lead.
Right.
But you know what? Like I've said it before, if I knew Amy 10 years ago, maybe my clearance rate would have been higher.
Well, hindsight, you know.
Yeah, it's a great thing, you know. I ask her for the lotto numbers all the time, but she won't give them to me. She's yelling at me now.
No, lotto numbers.
Steve, since we're talking about kind of your techniques, in the course of doing the show, have you found that your approach to investigation has changed at all?
100%. I say it all the time. I ask questions now that I would have never asked in the first season. But I know what I need to ask for her and to get to the bottom. You know, I ask my usual questions anyway to get to know what I need to know. But now I find myself asking questions I wouldn't normally ask. You know, tell me about the person. You know, normally I wouldn't care less about the person. Not that I wouldn't care less, but I wouldn't really be so concerned about what kind of person they were. But now that's important because I don't know who she's going to encounter. I need to know what kind of person that person was. So for me, I'm asking questions I wouldn't normally ask in an investigation.
I had sensed that. It seems to me, I mean, that confirms my sort of general sense that you had, you know, maybe broadened out a bit about how you go about talking
Absolutely.
To people and the way and the kinds of questions that you ask. Hey, can you guys give us any little hints as to some of the more interesting cases coming up in our current season or Return to Live shows? I loved the dentist one last week, by the way.
Yeah, Dr. Grimes was such a sweet man, I tell you the truth. He was one of the best clients we ever worked for.
He's so adorable.
He was such a sincere guy, and, you know, he really had a compassionate stake in the whole thing that was happening there.
He seemed very concerned about that girl.
Yes.
Yeah, he was. And you know what? Amy helped him, and he's a sweet man. And, you know, the fact that he's a dentist, he's a doctor, and he decided to call us in.
It's amazing.
It's amazing because, you know, he's a professional. You know, it's not like me calling somebody, and this guy's, you know, he's a doctor. And I think it brings credibility to both of us. And the fact that he, you know,
was willing to
listen
and do it and be open to the whole process.
And his wife made us cookies that night.
Yeah, she did.
His wife made us cookies. They were very, very sweet people.
They were yummy.
Upcoming episodes, it's hard to say because we kind of had a little hiccup with Amy having to get surgery. So things are not running as fast as we thought they were going to run. But we are doing revisit episodes that everybody's been asking for.
Oh, yeah.
So hopefully that'll... be fun to see. We don't know how it's going to turn out.
You haven't done those yet?
We've done one so far, but two?
Yeah, we did.
Oh, I'm sorry, we've done two.
Right.
Right. So it's two revisits in one episode is what it's going to be. So you're going to see two different cases in one episode.
Can you tell us anything about them?
You know what? I don't know. I don't know if we can, be honest with you, because, I mean, there's nothing. I think it's just us revisiting and listen to the clients and what they've gone through since we were there. So, you know, I don't know. They haven't shown us anything from it, so I can't really comment on it.
Right. Well, that brings up a really interesting point. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say that you're talking about revisiting, and that brings up something that I wanted to ask you about. At the end of some of your reveals, when the two of you are sitting down with the client, there are times when you have told the client that you don't believe they should stay there. You don't believe it's safe for them to stay in their house. And I've had this discussion with other paranormal investigators and other psychics, and there is a consensus out there, albeit maybe a small part, but people that feel that that is not a very responsible thing to do, to tell people that they need to leave their house. I think it just depends on how much you believe what's going on, and if they have their faith in you, then that's fine. But I can only imagine sitting down with somebody and having them say, it's not safe to be in your house, you need to leave. Do those people leave? I mean, are these some of the cases that you're going back to that you've been discussing? Have any of them left, or have any of them chosen to stay with bad consequences?
Well,
here's the thing, is that when I approach a case, as a medium, I get what I get, but I also have a background in psychology and sociology. So I'm not just analyzing the dead that are there. I'm also analyzing the living, and I'm, you know, seeing how this can be resolved. You know, I was mentored by Dr. William Roll for 4 years, as would a graduate student be in parapsychology. And I bring all of these tools that I've, you know, amassed over the years, and I bring it to the situation and very logically sit down and think about what is best for these people, both the living and the dead, and what needs to be done and what can be done to resolve this. And I will do everything I can to resolve that situation to the best of my abilities. But in rare instances, it is not healthy for the living person. If they are sick and it has been making them ill, it is not a good situation for them to remain there.
And, you know,
I only
also
remember that once or twice. How many times have you said that in shows that have aired?
We had that once, actually. Elizabeth City, I think.
Yeah. It was pretty powerful to hear that.
You got to understand something, Eric. When I interview these clients, and 95% of the time it never hits the air, they edit it, I let them know, listen, you called this in. I have no idea what Amy's going to see here, but you got to be prepared for her to tell you, burn the friggin' house down or get out. Or, you know, I told you got to prepare yourself for the worst. I mean, don't call us in and think we're going to piecemeal. We're going to tell you what we got, and that's it.
I don't edit what I get. And like I said, I will do everything I can to find a peaceful resolution for both the living and the dead. But if I'm encountering an individual who is physically ill, who is, you know, at the whim of either their illness or that something physical could happen to that location that would put them in even more jeopardy, of course I'm going to want them out of there.
Yeah, she doesn't do it to be mean. I mean, she's doing it for their safety and their, you know, for their best intentions, you know, for their well-being.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you think that there are ways that the clients themselves can take back their house? I know you said that you try to resolve it any way you can for the living and the dead, but I know that as a homeowner, I would be furious if I couldn't stay in my house because of something was going on, and I would probably choose to stay and fight.
I mean, you can ask, like I said, it is extremely rare that I tell someone that they must leave, and I only do it in cases where the person is physically ill and possibly dying from what's happening there, or something could happen to that location that could kill them. That is the only time I would recommend that somebody leave their location, and that's only if if you've watched all the episodes, I do give a laundry list of many things that the people can do to empower themselves, be proactive, and take back their homes. It's very rare that it's a situation that is absolutely overrun with the dead, overrun with evil entities, like that location in Austin was.
Oh, the one in Cedar Park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I would think, viewing this kind of from the outside, that you kind of would have no choice, Amy, as far as dealing with yourself and your own sense of integrity, that if that's the way you feel, then
exactly.
Whether that's convenient or not, that's what you're going to tell them.
Exactly. I am there for that person, and I'm not going to edit what I see or get and what I recommend to do.
I think that's what makes your show stand out from the rest of them, that you don't edit them, that you do say what's on your mind. And I think people are so used to the other approach that the one show uses the...
I'm sorry, you're breaking up. Wait.
Yeah, Teresa, all of a sudden you're talking to us from the other side. Is that what it sounds like, Amy?
No.
I pissed someone off. And is it better now?
Yeah,
okay.
You were just getting an echo, and you were kind of trailing off.
I made someone mad. I was just playing devil's advocate here, and I think I made somebody angry. Just saying the contrast between what you do on your show compared to another show, and I won't mention who it is, but a show that I've never heard them say to ever that, the ghost is dangerous or what's going on is dangerous. You always hear, ghosts can't hurt you. Ghosts can't hurt you. And being in this business as long as I've been in, I know they can because I have been physically hurt by a ghost.
Right.
So I think that the shock on people's faces, not even just the clients, but the people watching the show is probably like, wow, because they're so used to that candy-coated marmalade type of ghost show.
Well,
there was a disclaimer at the beginning of the show, so.
What I keep trying to say is what feels to me so different about this show, and I've talked about it many times with my wife or even my kids, because we all watch. We're religious. We would not miss it whatsoever. What my wife finds to be actually disturbing, about the show is that it feels so much more real. And Amy, the things that you
go
through.
It is real. Well, it may be on TV, and I'm not going to throw stones at any other show on TV, but we go through great lengths and processes to make. Listen, we're not going to jeopardize, and we're not going to. What's the word we like to use? We're not going to.
We're not going to jeopardize what we have.
Our integrity and our investigations. We do what we do. And we made it clear at the beginning, if we're going to do the show, we're going to do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to tell me, go talk to this guy because that'll make the show better. No, that's not how it works. Mm-hmm. We take a case leads you where it leads you. That was a big thing when I was on the job. Is you go where the case leads you, not how it makes it better, where it leads you, and that's what you do.
Yep.
And I think that just comes across on TV as well. This is reality. This is it. This is not made up stuff.
Well, we see so much that Amy goes through, and sometimes almost to the point of transformation. There are times when you are speaking in someone else's voice, or maybe someone is speaking in your voice, I guess is what it is. Is that true? That seems to be the case sometimes.
Well, yeah,
are you
literally
conveying someone else's words?
Yes.
Yeah, Erieville, you did.
They're standing there talking at me or yelling at me or whatever they're doing. I just see people. The only difference for me is, really nothing except they're dead. But they look normal, usually, most of it. Some are in their death states. They just look like living people, but they're dead, unless they're messed up, and then I know right away. Yeah.
Like in Black Shear, she knew right away.
Right, right. Well, I'm saying that, I think, the fact that people can see that, and you go through all these various swings, and personality even changes. And I think that catches people off guard, perhaps, because it feels so different from the kind of, let's face it, the rather routine, you know, process of some of the other shows, especially the ones that have been around the longest. I mean, I'm sure it gets harder and harder to keep it fresh. But, you know, it's that level of personal involvement, and I would say that's a reflection of integrity, the integrity of, on both your parts and on the part of the show, you know, that we see those things, and it's not always pretty, you know, it can be nasty,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't always, you know, neatly wrap up at the end, but it does feel real to me, and that to me is very, very impressive. You know, if someone is out there, and there's a lot of people who are looking for a tangible, an objective reason to believe in some form of afterlife and to believe in something that's bigger than what we typically see in our everyday lives. And for me personally, your show is one of the things that I would point someone to. Take a look at this, you know, just take it at face value. I mean, either this show is a total hoax or there is something going on there.
Well, you know, I think there's plenty of people out there that think it's a total hoax, and I get it. Listen, I get that totally. If I was sitting on my couch and I saw this,
mm-hmm.
I probably would be a little skeptical myself. I'd be like, this is bullshit. But you know what? Having lived it and doing it, I know it's not. So, you know, you can't please everybody. You don't like it, turn the station. You know, what can I tell you?
We've always done what we do, and the only difference is that it's being filmed.
Filmed, yeah, basically.
And that it's filmed and on television.
I think. It's like we're not doing really anything different than we would have done in our normal lives. It's
mm-hmm.
just,
yeah.
You know, it's being filmed. The cases are different for me, but it's still an investigation. You know, people ask this all the time. We're not ghost hunters, and we'll never
right.
claim we are, and that's it.
Right.
We're investigators with two different methods of investigation. That's it.
Well, it seems as though Amy does not have to do a whole lot of hunting.
Well, sometimes they try to hide, and then I have to, you know,
smoke them out.
Basically, yeah.
Hey, we have a caller, and I'd like to get to you, caller, from 678 here. That will be fun and interesting. I did want to ask before I forgot. I'm very interested in hearing from each of you, and you know, you can pick either one or both. I'm curious as to which episode, and I suppose you have to stick with what has aired so far, has really been the most gratifying, and what has been the most disappointing?
Oh, that's a tough question. For me, Santa Fe was one of our most intense cases. It was gratifying for me because of a lot of reasons of the investigation was really intense. Amy had to do two walks. It was a crazy case, and we always said that should have been a two-hour special.
That sucker got me sick.
We feel there was a lot of material that unfortunately couldn't be put on the air because of the time constraint, obviously.
Yeah.
But there was a lot to that case that really didn't get on air, but unfortunately. I think, I tell you this, Dr. Grimes' case was probably one of the most
satisfying
for us.
It absolutely was.
Yeah, it really was.
That's the client you want, that you hope you're getting is someone who is just open and willing to do what they need to do for themselves and the dead individual.
And Kristen in Wichita, I think, was another. I was so happy to help her out. Well, not me so much, but more so for Amy, was able to help her out. And she's a doll, and you know, mm-hmm. she's got abilities apparently.
Yes.
And Amy's been able to help her out, and she needed help.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, people like that, it just.
They want the help, and they really accept the help.
What has been disappointing?
Kind of, for me, I think it's when they don't listen to Amy's advice, for me.
I just get nervous for them.
You know, to me, if you're going to call somebody in to, you know, it's like calling a plumber in, and he says you got a leak, and you don't fix it, what can I tell you? You're going to have water damage. You know, it's that simple.
Right.
That's the part that, you know, you call us in for a case and then you don't take the advice. I don't know what to tell you then.
Well, are you aware of any that have deteriorated even since you left?
I don't know if we can get into that. We really can't. For lots of reasons, we really can't get into that. Hopefully these revisit things will clear up some of those answers.
Yeah, a lot of those questions, right?
Yeah, answers. That's good. I'm glad.
I think it's going to wind up being a total of, 10 cases we're going to revisit.
Wow.
Yeah. So you're going to get 2 cases per episode, and I think it's going to be 5 episodes just on revisits.
Well, that will be very interesting because, you know, I mean, just it's the nature of the time, the length of the show, and the fact that the result, we see the recommendation, but how they chose to act upon it is almost like an afterthought tacked on there because of time, you know, constraints. So it'll be great to see.
I think a lot of people just want answers. And just want to know what the hell's going on. Once they know, they're like, all right, well, I'll deal with it when I can.
Well, and here's the problem, too, is that what has been relayed through media is individuals going in and finding, you know, here's an orb on film or here's an EVP. Bye. And so the person knows, okay, my house is active, but they don't really know what to do about it. And so, you know, this is something that maybe the people don't expect a laundry list of, you know, 15 things that they have to do to protect their home, their family, and it's something they have to be proactive about. And I think that catches a lot of people off guard. It's not really resolved in an hour. You know, it's going to take you months.
Right.
And I'm so glad you brought that up, Amy, because that is one of my biggest pet peeves with some of these other shows who have unfortunately set some sort of unwritten precedent for the paranormal shows that are on TV. They are called into a location. They do whatever it is they do, their investigation. Then they sit down with the client and they say, well, yes, your house is haunted, or no, it's not. But they'll say, yes, your house is haunted, goodbye, and then they leave.
Yeah.
Obviously the people knew it was haunted or they wouldn't have called them in.
Right.
And that has been, and even in real life, when you do cases, that is one of my biggest pet peeves. Is that,
yeah.
What are you doing? Why is it haunted? Who is it haunted by?
Right.
What are you going to do about it?
Right.
So,
I'm sorry to cut you off, but I think that's what we bring to the table. Is like Amy can tell you what's going on and I can kind of back it up and say, well, this is who's doing it. Or this is why it's happening. And this is why these people are here. So a lot of shows, I mean, I don't know of any other show on TV that's doing what we do.
Not to that level of depth. I think that that's great. I think that that's the best part about it. I find that what you do, Steve, is so fascinating, the research and the history and the digging deep and getting into the record.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing that a lot of people don't do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Well, you know, a lot of people don't know how to.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. One thing. And number two, it's, you know, when you've been a detective as long as I have, you can get a lot of information out of people without them knowing they're giving it to you. And if you don't have that ability, John Q. Citizen just can't walk into a library and ask a library, do me a favor, find out this information for me. I appreciate it. You know, it's a talent, so to speak. To get people to give you a hand and help you out on these things. I mean, I could never do it on my own. I have to get help from people I'm working with in these different counties.
That brings up something, too, and then we'll try the caller. It's amazing to me and very interesting and reassuring, I think, to find that pretty much everywhere you guys go, you know, there's someone there who has a strong interest in the history, in local history. There's some form of official or unofficial local historian pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, you know what it is, especially in small towns. It's, you know, especially in small towns where a story may be the biggest story in that town. It's not like you're in Brooklyn or in Manhattan where you got, you know, 1,000 stories where, you know, you can live there your whole life and not know it. Some of these small places, some of these instances, that's the biggest story in town, and it just everybody knows about it, and there's always one person, or even two, excuse me, that become real experts. And those are the people I look for. I mean, and they're easy to find because people love to talk about what they know. You know, it's their chance to tell you, I know all about this stuff. Let me tell you about it.
I know all about this. Allow me to show you. Allow me to demonstrate.
Yeah, it's. But you know what? Those are the people you need. That's you know, you need people like that. Without them, you can't find out the information.
It's efficient. I mean, think if you had to go through, you know, random, you know, newspaper clippings and stuff like that.
Well, I do, but it's time-consuming, and it just, you know what, it's not. It's knowing where to know and it's knowing who to ask that it only comes with experience. So when I get a lot of people on Facebook ask me, Steve, how can I go about doing A, B, and C? Well, a lot of the checks I do, you got to pay for. You can't do that. You need a private eye license to get some of these accesses. You know, so, or you can hire a PI company to do it for you, but you're going to get charged $500 per check you're trying to do. So for a regular citizen, it could be an expensive process. And, you know, I walk in as a private investigator and I say, this is the case I'm doing. Can you help me out? You know, I'm a retired detective, all this other stuff. It's not like, you know, Joey's walking in, he works in the grocery store and he wants to find out information. They're going to look at him like, what do you want? You know. And not to say that I'm any better than anybody else, but that's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah, it is. One thing that I've always done is I've always had a professor of history, or I've worked with police officers or agents.
As you do now.
Yeah.
Well, it is an amazing pairing. Let us try. Let me see. Here we go. Area code 678, are you there?
I don't know. Is it me?
Yes. Are you 678 area code?
Well, yeah. We have many here.
I may.
All right. Well, what's your name? And do you have a question for Amy and Steve?
My name is Dana. And first and foremost, I wanted to thank Amy because I feel a kinship with her. And we have similar educational backgrounds. But I've had to keep things hidden for a long time and use it to the best of my abilities in another field. Mm-hmm. And since the show has come out, my family, of course you can tell I'm Southern, has had difficulty with anyone knowing. And difficulty, put it this way, growing up it was easier to feel like I was a little left of center and feel like, well, maybe I'm crazy, than it was to say, this is what it is.
This is what it is. This is what I am.
Yeah, and since the show has come out, my mother is actually watching.
Good.
Almost 7. And she is asking me questions finally at this point in my life.
That's wonderful.
So I have to really thank you for that.
Oh, I really am glad. You know, we went in this to hopefully educate and help, you know, everyone, you know, communicate more freely about this subject, because it is something that's a part of many, many people.
I mean, I had a mentor that was like, I went in the field of psych and counseling, and they were like, what you're doing is no different. It just has a different title.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You're helping them in the same way. My other question was, do you feel like things are becoming more active with the unrest and chaos that's going on politically and you know, we're advancing in electronics, et cetera?
I'm sorry. How do I feel? I'm sorry. The first part was kind of cut.
Do you feel like activity, paranormal or spiritual activity, is becoming stronger or increasing, because of the political unrest in society and because of all the advancements in electronics?
I feel that it's something that's happening on an evolutionary level. I think that people are simply becoming more and more aware of each other and each other's energy. And I think this might, you know, don't know how to feel and interpret this energy. So I just think it's something that's naturally occurring for us as human beings. And it, you know, where people are having more experiences with each other, with the dead. It's just kind of an awakening process that we're meant to go through.
And last question is, if you had my daughter is very sensitive, and she's becoming more aware of it.
Uh-huh.
And I try to make it more natural rather than special.
Right. Mm-hmm.
For lack of a better way to put it.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have any recommendations?
I think, how old is she?
10.
Okay. You know, I always suggest that they keep a journal about their experiences, that you guys talk about the journal at least once a week, not saying anything, you know, just listening and say, oh, that's interesting, yeah, you know, and you remember this and how did you do it and all this, you know, what was the interaction like and, you know, getting more specifics out, but not making it something that is bad or wrong or something that they don't feel they can communicate about. Feel free to be able to communicate with you about this. And so, you know, keeping a journal with pictures and, you know, descriptions of what they've seen and how the interactions have gone, you know, maybe, you know, discussions about it in the home.
I mean, my husband is not sensitive, but he's completely supportive of it. We just worry about, you know, when she goes to school and...
Hmm.
Well, you know, the thing about that is that I always was attracted to others. And it's kind of a knowing without knowing at that age. And
yeah, I
understand. You're attracted to people who are other sensitives. And, you know, even though it wasn't something I was, you know, really communicative about until I was about like 13 with my friends or 12. Well, actually, no, probably about 11. I'm sorry, 11 to 13. You know, it was something that we always talked about, like the paranormal in general. Maybe not specifically applying to us, but in general.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, I greatly appreciate it, and I want to thank you once again. And Steve is an awesome compliment to it. He gives it legitimacy and, like I said before, he's old school cool.
Yeah, he is. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm so glad. Thank you.
Great call. Thank you very much, Dana.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we lucked out. As Teresa knows, you never know what you're going to get because we don't have any way of screening the calls. But that was a great one. I have a random question. Kind of forgive me, please, because I'm so fascinated by the implications of, again, the reality of this that you bring to it or that you show me. It makes it feel real to me. All right, so if it's real, then there are so many implications. I'm very involved with and always have been and very interested in music, and I've been a DJ, I've been in bands, and written about music, blah, blah, blah. Do the dead have a relationship with music? Can they feel it, hear
yeah.
it, understand it?
I've had them sing songs, which I'm not allowed to do on the show because they're copyrighted.
Right.
So they said, you know, it'll never make air, you know, that stuff. I mean, I do it anyways, but you guys don't really get to see it because they are copyrighted. But, yeah, absolutely. Some of them communicate through songs. They'll give me a song like in Cartersville in Georgia.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah,
one,
yeah. In the
it
second
was,
season.
A song called Tainted Love.
Yeah, we can't.
Of course.
We can't hold
soft sell.
Yeah, so that was... You know, this dead guy was singing that song to me, you know, throughout the entire walk, in the car before getting to the location even. So, you know, but yeah, they absolutely have a relationship. You know, if it means something to you in life, it'll mean something to you in death. And if that's how you need to express something, because for whatever reason you can't communicate otherwise or you feel it will express yourself, you know, what your meaning is that you want out specifically, they'll totally utilize it.
Interesting. Now, can they hear, appreciate, understand music from now or only in relationship to their lives?
No, they can, like for instance, my guide liked the original Putting on the Ritz. But he really liked, you know, he really likes the 80s.
The Taco version.
The Taco version?
Taco was the guy who redid it in the 80s.
Oh, okay, yeah, he likes that one too. So, I mean, they're, you know, they're aware of what's going on around them for the most part. Sometimes there are the dead that are kind of stuck, you know, in their reality and only in their time frame.
Interesting. And then my last sort of, because, you know, as always, the time really flies. I can't even believe we're down to the final 5 minutes. Now, you mentioned that, you know, one of the really important things that you can do or seek to do is to help the dead move on. Where are they moving on to, and is that something you have also experienced?
Don't yell at me for it. I don't experience any of this stuff. Repeat the question, because you're going to be answering that question.
When you're helping the dead move on, where are they moving on to?
Oh.
I can't answer that question unbiasedly.
Well, I mean, just your opinion?
I really don't like to express that. I feel that, you know, my perception of the afterlife is biased by my religious upbringings and those things around me that I've been exposed to, and it's not my place to preach what I have been exposed to and what is tainted with my biases.
That's a very interesting answer, actually.
A great answer. I like it.
It's generic, but also heartfelt. I like that. But that would lead to one. The next question would be, do you think it is a relative thing? In other words, is it different for each person, depending, for example, on their upbringing?
Mm.
I believe that. My thing is that I don't believe any sensitive knows what the afterlife is, because they were brought up a certain way, or they studied this or that, and that has filtered what the dead or whoever has shown them. So that's why I don't feel comfortable expressing my personal belief system and what I believe to be out there. I can say it's a positive thing, what I have interpreted personally. As far as other people and their religious beliefs, I respect them. I think that there is something to every religion that's out there that can speak, as long as it makes the person happy and it resonates with them and it completes them, I'm happy.
Well, that is a wondrous answer, one that I will float out of here upon and contemplate with my head upon my pillow.
I have a quick question for you. The show itself obviously is very serious. You take a very serious approach. You're both very serious about your roles and what you do, and it's great. And I think the show is taken as a serious show. But there are times when you find yourselves, when you're on location or when you're shooting, do you ever find times when you're like, having fun? I mean, I don't want to say that you obviously have great personalities. You obviously can joke around and everything. But are there times when you're in this serious moment, a very serious investigation or in the midst of things, but do you ever have time to just let loose and unwind and have fun? I mean, do you guys get to share a laugh besides sharing all this heavy stuff that you share on the show?
She's looking at me like, you better answer this one. You know, for me, I have a lot of fun with the clients at some point because, you know, I'm there to make them feel good and keep them at ease and let them know we're there to help them. 99% of the fun stuff that I encounter with even people I interview is never going to make it to air. But to answer the other question, at the end of the day, after the investigation is done, we have our fun. We let our head down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't party with the clients, if that's what you're asking. I mean, we have the, you know, our crew and me and Amy and Matt, we're very, very close with our crew.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a very small family. Well, it's not that small, considering.
Yeah.
But we're very, very close with each other, and we all spend, after the investigation, spend a lot of time with each other.
That's good. I would imagine that humor is needed to heal.
Yes.
That is good to hear.
Yeah, we put a lot of hours in, believe it or not. Some of these days can be 16, 17, 18 hours. So, sure,
and you're traveling, and you're in strange places, and you're, you know, often, at least when you arrive at these places, you guys are the only ones you know.
Yeah, yes.
Yep.
You know, and then, you know, the other thing is when we get to a place, people are like, oh, how was it? I'm like, I have no clue. You know, I couldn't tell you. I saw it. I interviewed people. I went where I had to go, and I didn't see anything. I went to Key West, maybe even saw the freaking beach.
Right.
Yeah.
People don't realize that, you know, when you travel for work, and what you're doing is work.
And you're
it's
on the
a job.
Yeah,
you
I
know,
mean, we're living out of our suitcases, and it's...
We're on the road for 25 days this stretch.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's an awful lot. It's hard. All right. Well, we have passed the official endpoint that does still keep recording, so none of our magical words will be lost, thank goodness. But I really enjoyed it, again, very, very much. Really a pleasure to talk to both of you. Your relationship really seems great.
Yeah, me and Amy can tell
how much you like each other and respect each other.
Yeah, I mean, she yells at me every once in a while.
He yells at me. What are you talking about?
No, we love each other. We just, you know, we're like brother and sister, and I just... Yeah. We're very protective of each other.
Very.
So.
That shows. It really does. And I think that is, it's touching. You know, that's a really nice part of the show. You know, it may be a subtext, but I think that really does
come
through.
We argue, but, you know.
Yeah.
We argue.
Yes.
But in a good way.
As all strong personalities do.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks so much, you guys. It was really a pleasure to talk to you.
Same
and
here.
I'm very excited to see how things unfold on the new episodes. And wish you the best.
Thank you. We're back on track, and the episodes are gonna. You know, we got a full year of episodes to come.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
thank
I'm very
so much,
happy
guys.
For your well, success.
Nice
and
meeting
I think,
you.
Same here.
Great.
It was great to talk to both of you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Have a great evening.
Bye.
Bye.
Teresa, why don't you tell our listeners who we have next week?
Next week we have, let me get it right. Stephen LaChance. Stephen LaChance, Haunted Survivor, Stephen LaChance will be joining us. Oh, my God, my words. It's been a rough day. We had registration for getting back to school. Stephen LaChance is joining us next week. He will fill us in a little bit more on what Elliot started to tell us about Fear House, and that's going to be a great interview. And then the following week, we have another great guest coming up, Brian Cano from Haunted Collector. So hope to see you all then.
Sensational. Very exciting. All right. Well, thank you very much. Another great show. It's nice to get back together with you, Teresa, after we were solo kind of last week. We were doing kind of odd time slots, and we had I guess we had three interviews in less than 2 weeks. But this was a lot of fun to be back to tag team them. It was great. It was a lot of fun. So hope you have a fantastic evening and a great week, and we will see you. Well, we won't see you, but we will talk to you next Tuesday at 10 o'clock.
All right. Good night,
everyone.